This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/joelduggan to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 165 for Wednesday, September 23rd, 2015. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me for the second time this month is Lou Page from Zombies Ate My Podcast, Off the Cuff, and indie-love.com. Welcome back, as always, sir.
I'm glad to be back. And I got some stuff to talk about today.
You do, which is good because I've got nothing.
I've seen some interesting things that I didn't think were going to be good that were good. So,
I like new stuff. We're coming into the fall season, and there's going to be some returns of favorites, and there's going to be some new things that I'm going to want to check out. Brockett and I were talking last week about what's up and coming. But how you been, man? Like, if for once it's not been a whole month since we've talked.
No, I'm good. It's my day job is very busy, and we've been trying to do Zamp week to week and keep up with Fear the Walking Dead. Okay. Now that that's out, and if you're not watching that, it's really good. I won't talk about it here because I talk about it every week. So
right,
yeah. But it's definitely not the regular Walking Dead. It's definitely different.
See, this is an expansion.
It's
like a
spinoff.
Spinoff. That's what, see. I was thinking video game chat. That's
yeah.
Why it's an expansion? Spinoff. Yes, that's what I meant.
It's a spinoff, and it takes place before all the zombies happen, and it takes place on the West Coast of America instead of the East Coast. And if you're interested in like LA and riots and things like that, if that sort of thing is kind of like those news headlines kind of pop for you, that's kind of what you're in for with the first season anyway.
Now, are you guys doing the same thing you do with The Walking Dead on Zombies Ate My Podcast? Are you doing like a blow by blow?
Yeah, we do an episode by episode.
That's great. That's awesome. So you'll have this to do.
Yep, and then it looks like we're either going to have a week off or go right into the regular Walking Dead right after.
Yeah, and I'm sure that you guys will find something to talk about on that week in between. I mean, you can do
we always have something to talk
preemptive, about. Like what you're expecting for that season of Walking Dead.
Yep, we'll do that, or sometimes a new game comes out that's zombie-related.
Yeah.
Or there's a bunch of new zombie-related TV shows that have come out in the last year or so, so one of us might watch one of them, or a movie might come out. One of our regular new segments is we make Ryan watch a really bad zombie movie and then discuss it. We kind of do that week to week, but nice. With Walking Dead, we've kind of let that slide for a couple of weeks. So
right on. Yeah, I couldn't do it. I've tried listening to podcasts like Film Sack and I find the hosts, of course, are funny and entertaining. I can't participate. Like, I can't go and watch the really terrible B movie on Netflix, and then
there's some of my favorite things.
Yeah, no, I just it's like nails on a chalkboard to me. Like, I was telling Brockett last week that there's been a number of movies in the last summer, trying to sit down on weekend evenings and watch a movie on Netflix and relax. And there's been several that I've dedicated like half an hour of my time, 45 minutes. I'm just like, I'm halfway in. I'm far enough in that I still want to know how this ends, but it's bad enough that I don't care, and I just shut it off.
Yeah.
Now, if I had paid for it, then I probably would have, like on a rental basis.
Oh, see, I'm not even like that. We rented some stuff from Redbox a couple months ago, and we sat down, and we made it about 10 minutes through each movie, and went, nope, not going to sit through this. Done. And I got right back in the car and took it right back to Redbox.
I think it's something important, I guess, is that there's a There's the dollar value that you rented something for, which in a digital realm could be pretty cheap.
Yeah.
And then there's the dollar value on your time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, do I really want to sit through this terrible movie on Netflix when if I break down my, you know, costs of Netflix, which is $8 Canadian a month. So for you in America, that's like $6.
I pay about the same.
No, no, I know, but I'm thinking with the exchange.
With the exchange.
I'm sure it's the same. I'm sure Netflix kind of prices it the same in whatever local currency is going.
Yeah, it's $8 for me here.
Yeah. So. If you're in the UK, listeners, let us know what it is overseas. It might be just £8, which would be crazy. That's like $16 for me. but yeah, I just, you know, so when it comes down to all of the different things, the TV shows and, you know, per hour watched, we're into the pennies. So yeah. To get partway into a movie and say, nope, I'm saving an awful lot of money as far as my time is concerned. Like I can then go read a book or I can come back in here and do some more drawing. And the problem is that usually Netflix is it's out of the studio. It's my escape time. I can't work when I'm in the living room.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, because what I've been doing lately is I've been more on my lunch breaks. I've found a lot of tutorial videos lately and I've been watching those on YouTube or over my network with my set-top box, and it's great, but it's not necessarily a break. Like I'm going from making art to then learning about art, and it's productive, but it means that I don't have much to talk about this week.
Yeah, I was gonna say you're doing a lot of art stuff and not watching a lot of entertainment.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, like you know, sometimes you guys just put, you know, the bull just has to put the horns down and do it. And I'm coming into the last, you know, week or so of the month, and that's always crunch time for me trying to get deadlines and stuff made. Basically, it's in the freelance world, it's like you need to finish the things so that you can get paid, so that rent can come out. It's basically the way that it goes. But talking about rentals, and this is something that I lost in the notes that we didn't have time to recoup before the show. If you were joining us earlier, the Google Doc crashed and I lost everything. But Lou didn't, which is weird. So The Imitation Game with Benedict Cumberbatch. I was dealing with Netflix paralysis on, I want to say, Saturday night. And instead of going to Netflix, I went to rent the movie for $6 on iTunes. But right next to the $6 to rent it was $8 to buy it. So I bought it.
And did you enjoy it? Was it worth your $8?
It was a fantastic film. I don't know about rewatching it, but still, it would, you know, it's one of those things. It's like the Da Vinci Code or Angels and Demons. Like once every 5 years, you know, you can kind of go back and watch it because you know how it ends, but you don't remember how they get there, like all the different nuances and stuff. So this was pretty clear. I mean, and if you're a history buff, then you know how it ends anyway. But I really enjoyed it. And I won't go into detail because I don't have my notes and I don't want to do a review disservice. But the real communication for this week is it's only $8 to go buy the HD version. So why not? You know, if you're going to rent it for $6, if it's something that you were interested in having, it wasn't on any of my other services. I couldn't get it any other way. I just went to the iTunes store to think, like, what came out the summer that I missed that I can rent? Now, the list was long, but none of it was available yet. So, like, Inside Out, Jurassic World, a lot of the movies, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., like they're all still in theater.
Yeah.
So I haven't, so those ones, or they're in pre-order, like they're in that in-between stage where you can pre-order it for $25, but it's like, well, some of them I just want to see for the sake of seeing. Others, if I own them, I'll want to own a Blu-ray. Like, you know, Pixar stuff, I'd prefer to own a hard copy of it. So yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I've sort of started moving away from anything physical. I had a movie collection that was probably about 1,000 DVDs, and I've slowly dwindled it down to probably about 200. And if it continues the way it is, I'll probably be down to about 50 by Christmas time.
Hmm.
Just because I can't stand the, they just take up too much space now.
Yeah.
I have tubs full of DVDs. And I'm like, no, they got to go away.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I've got all my DVDs on the shelf, and I'm kind of looking at my bookshelves in my living room, kind of going, I wish I had more space for books.
Yeah.
Because I have more, like, I've got books piling up on the coffee table because I don't have room on the shelves for them. So I've thought about going through and taking out some of the movies that I would, that I won't watch. Like, I'll leave the Disney ones out because sometimes when I'm sketching and whatever, I'll want to throw on like a classic Disney film.
Yeah.
And I don't own them, nor did I have access to them until recently. Netflix added a bunch of Disney stuff last week, but there's a lot of movies that I could take off my DVD shelf because the high-res version is on Netflix, like the 1080p version. So right. I could potentially have a better watching experience on Netflix than I would popping a DVD in.
It's too bad we can't just put our DVDs in and tell our services, oh yeah, Amazon, I own this movie already.
Yes.
Just give me your version.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know that some music services have done that, you know, where you can upload stuff that you own. And
I would be more than happy to mail my DVDs to Netflix if they just give me digital copies to my account.
Yeah, really though. Well,
and then they could just go resell them.
Netflix is an odd beast. You'd have to go with something like Amazon or,
right,
or I guess iTunes or any of the more permanent places where you buy things. Because Netflix, it has a rotation.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want my things that I own to go out of rotation. Or maybe, I mean, yeah, I'm not sure how the rotation license agreement works. So I don't know that they could keep it for some people and not for others. But I like the idea of what has been happening lately is that when you do buy a physical disc, which is, this is the reverse. When you buy a physical disc, they give you a code that you can then download and have a digital copy as well.
Right.
Which is great.
I've been slowly redeeming all of the ones I haven't done for those.
Yeah.
Like redeem the codes. And I'm like, oh, it's a hassle, but now I know I'll never have to worry about it.
And FYI, people, do it right away because they expire.
Yeah.
I missed the opportunity. I have the Lord of the Rings on Blu-ray and I forgot to do the code, so I don't have a digital copy of it. I just have the Blu-rays.
Yeah, I have a Tron Legacy code somewhere. I think I need to redeem that.
Mm. That was, I really enjoyed that.
You did or didn't?
Did. I did enjoy Tron. Yeah. I mean, it's not a fantastic movie, but
it's not a fantastic movie, but it's fun.
I saw it in IMAX and it was really cool. It had a really fun visual story for me. And in IMAX, the sound was crazy. The Daft Punk soundtrack was just nuts. Like, you kind of needed a break from everything afterwards.
Yeah.
So the only other thing that I've had time to do this week was to complete my journey on Narcos, which is the Netflix original series about Pablo Escobar and his drug cartel in the late 80s, early 90s. All I have to say is that it is excellent. It's a great start. I hope it only goes 2 to 3 seasons max.
It only go for 2 to 3 seasons unless they change the story and do like a... If it becomes a different drug lord story, that's the only way they could
change. I don't want them to do that. The guy that I can't remember his name off the top of my head again because my notes have been destroyed. But the guy that plays Pablo Escobar steals the show. And if they do another dude as a drug lord, I'm not going to care as much. And something I want to preface as well is that I was too young when this was all happening in the late 80s, early 90s, is around 10. Didn't care about a drug lord in Colombia. So I don't know how this ends. I haven't looked it up. I don't exactly know. I know he was, from just kind of culture in general, I know that he was a thorn in the side of the U.S. for a long time. And they, I'm sure, eventually got him. But I don't know the details. And I don't want anybody to tell me. I am quite happy watching Narcos as my way of finding that out. But I highly recommend it. And I can't thank Hammond enough. Because I've had a rough summer of finding stuff. And to have yet one more amazing Netflix original series that I was teetering on. To look at it from the outside, you're like, I don't know if I really want to watch that. But, you know, Hammond kind of tipped my hand, and I have to tip my hat to Hammond and tell everybody else to go check it out.
Yeah, I got to say, I haven't watched Narcos yet, but all of Hammond's suggestions have been great. I know he's a big proponent for Booth at the End on Hulu. And I got to say that that's actually a really awesome show. So
yeah, I really have to figure out how to get Hulu or just try to broaden my content in Canada. I'm really having a hard time with the doldrums of Netflix, and my Show Me, my Show Me subscription is about to end. And Show Me is cool. There's enough of an overlap with Netflix though that I don't want to pay an extra $10 a month or whatever it is for another streaming service. Like, I'm already paying enough.
Yeah.
So I there's so many different things. I mean, it's going to get to the point where all these different services are going to want their, $7 to $10 a month. And eventually it's going to be as much as a cable bill.
Yeah. That's kind of my thing is recently we've been dwindling down a bunch of the services we were using just because it's now down to Hulu and Netflix. And then I have an Amazon Prime account. So that's just my yearly Amazon Prime renewal fee. So I don't pay for that all year except once a year. So it's not a big deal. But those are my three primary services.
Yeah. Like I said, it's just the free month for Show Me and then my Netflix subscription. And any kind of purchase that I have access to, like whether I'm buying a digital copy from, insert whatever service here, that's usually where I go. That's kind of it really for me this week. Cause I haven't had much time and I won't bore anybody with going into all the different, YouTube channels that I've been surfing. Cause they've been such tiny bite-sized content in such numerous channels that I feel like maybe I'll do a YouTube show in the future where we'll just talk about what we've been watching on YouTube. But you, sir, have got some cool stuff.
Yeah. So I've recently just upgraded to the Hulu without any commercials that they're offering, which was like an extra $3 a month, I think, $3 or $4 a month. And I was like, okay, now that I don't have to watch commercials, let's see what I can find that I might not have put myself through because I didn't want to sit through the commercial breaks. And I was bored one night, and I didn't even realize this was on Hulu, but they remade Scream as a TV show on MTV.
Okay.
And I don't know if you like those movies or you're a fan of those movies at all.
I remember liking the first one.
Well, if you like the first one, you're going to probably like the TV show. Surprisingly enough, I didn't know if they could stretch it out a whole season. Season is 10 episodes.
Hmm.
That's it. And it's done. And it does look, and it is coming back for a second season. And they do. I won't tell you how or what, but they do point in a direction where there definitely could be another season.
Hmm.
I don't know how they're going to, it would have to take place in a years later kind of thing, but they're definitely going to bring it back with the same cast.
So Scream is the one with the long white mask.
The ghost face guy that kills
okay.
people. Yeah.
Okay. So I would have been 16 or 17 when that came out. So that might explain why I liked it.
Yeah, I was about the same age, so that's why I liked it, too. And I've always been a big fan of slasher movies. I think they're the modern equivalent of the murder mystery movie, where it's really about who's done it, who's the guy that's running around slashing people.
Yeah, who's the axe murderer.
Yeah, who's the axe murderer. And this show nails that feeling really, really well. The premise is, 20 years ago, there was a kid who he had... elephantism, like the elephant man, and his parents kept him boarded up in the house, and slowly he convinced his parents to start letting him go out of the house, and he had a crush on one of the nearby girls, and showed up at the school dance, got into it with her boyfriend, and proceeded to start killing a bunch of people off at the high school, slasher movie style.
Right.
Well, that was 20 years ago. That kid got killed in the process. The police ended up shooting him and he died. Well, now, 20 years later, somebody is basically doing the same thing. They've slashed up a bunch of people from the school, and they think that it's like a spiritual successor of the killer.
Right, like a copycat killer, yeah.
Like it's a copycat kind of thing. And somehow the lead actress and her mother are somehow involved in what's going on, as in somebody is doing it and leaving them notes. And as the series goes on, you've learned a little bit about more about the mother's past, the daughter's past, and there's a huge cast of characters. I'd probably say there's about 15 or 16.
Oh, wow, that's a lot.
And you don't know, it could literally be absolutely any of them that is the killer. And right down to the last episode, you're kind of down to about, you know, 4 or 5 people that it could possibly be. And you still don't know until the end when it's revealed. I had a sneaking suspicion who it was going to be, but it still could have been anybody at that point.
Hmm.
And they do a really good job of keeping you guessing right up until the end.
I always like that. I mean, even if I figure it out, I really appreciate the ones where I figure it out just moments before it's actually revealed to the audience.
Right.
I feel like that happened a couple times in the Game of Thrones books where I figured out something and then that was literally the next chapter. I was like, oh my gosh, I was right. You know, like stuff like that I always found really cool. I don't like when I figure it out too early, you know, when people telegraph stuff. How long has it been since you've been genuinely surprised by something in media like that, like a mystery reveal where you're just like, oh shit, I did not see that coming at all?
It's been a while. It's been a really long time, to be honest. I usually can spot it a mile away because they all follow writing tropes.
Mm-hmm.
And this show does a really good job of kind of, every time you think it's somebody, like they end up either being the next one that gets killed or they end up in another place where they couldn't be the killer. And you're like, well, if they're not the killer, then who is? And it keeps you guessing. So.
Hmm. That's cool.
And I will say, it does suffer a little bit from the CW. It's on MTV, so I can understand why. But the CW teeny stuff, like, it does hit a lot of that. But it makes sense because about 2/3 of the cast is teenagers.
Well, and here's the thing. Shows like that, any first season, at least the first 6 episodes, they're always like that. I mean,
yeah.
Arrow was like that. I mean, granted, Arrow crashed and burned for me, but Flash, Flash did not last that long. It was only about 3 episodes that it was very CW teeny, and then it got really into, oh, well, I'm a superhero now, and I'm an adult. And they're all in their 20s. Like, it's not like they're in school or anything.
Right.
So that was cool. But, I mean, Flash is one of my favorite TV shows, and it definitely started off as a classic CW, you know, sort of feel to it. So I can't knock it. They have to get enough of an audience in there at first. But then once they know they have it, like once their mid-season ratings are in, then they can really be like, all right, sweet, we've got everybody. Now we can actually write a decent show.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that it's frustrating for producers and writers, but I mean, that's the way that the machine works, right?
Right. And the other thing I found that was surprised me with the show is when it began, there were a bunch of characters. I was like, oh, so he's the sports guy I'm not going to like. He's the other character I'm not going to like.
Mm.
He's the goofball jerk I'm not going to like. Right. And it slowly, as you actually go through the episodes, you actually start to like those characters. And they do a good job of kind of making you go, hey, that guy might have been a jerk, but here's why he's a jerk. Mm-hmm. Or the character, like there's one character that's kind of a jerk. And basically later on in the series, he makes a comment like, in other words, like, I'm insecure. What can you blame me kind of thing? And you're like, oh, so that's why he's a jerk. He's trying to hide the fact he's insecure. Wow, they did a really good job of telegraphing that.
And
the other interesting thing too is it definitely is all about technology. Like it all begins with a kid being bullied at school and like internet bullied, where someone posts a video on YouTube that they shouldn't be posting on YouTube and gets somebody in trouble.
Right.
And that's how it all begins.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see a modern take. I mean, you remember shows like The OC and Dawson's Creek and stuff like that. I'd be really curious to see a CW show or otherwise tackle the shit that teenagers have to deal with now. The real stuff. Not some fluffy version in like Beverly Hills, but like real kind of like Middle America, you know, or Middle North America, I guess, include Canada in there, trials and tribulations of being you know, not that I would really want to watch another teenage drama, but like that's the kind of thing that they would make. And I'd be curious to see how Facebook and Instagram and the internet and, you know, cell phones and everything else kind of play into it.
Well, while this is a typical slasher kind of thing, I was curious as how they'd stretch it out for 10 episodes, but they do a really good job of it. There's a lot of plot twists. There's a lot of continued story. And I was left kind of going, like, I actually had to find the last episode because it only was posted on Hulu this week. So I had to find it elsewhere to watch the last episode. Mm. And I was like, I don't want to wait a week. I've made it to episode 9. Now I just want to see episode 10, damn it. So I had to find other ways to watch the last episode.
Yeah. Hammond's in the chat room, and he was mentioning American Horror Story Season 1. Did you watch American Horror Story?
Yes.
So how does this hold up in comparison?
I'd say American Horror Story Season 1 is better, but if you like slasher movie type of stuff, this is really good.
So if you like American Horror Story, then you will like Scream on MTV?
Yeah.
Cool. Very, very cool.
And the other thing I've been watching that just showed up on Netflix, and I thought I would never like this show. It was one of those things when it got pitched and piloted a couple years ago, I was like, that's dumb, is Person of Interest with Jim Caviezel and the other guy that's from Lost that played Ben.
Okay.
And when I saw the promos for it, they made it like they were a government organization that was like tracking down like terrorists. That's the way the pilot stuff made it sound. And that's totally not what the show is about. It's got some of that, but that's not really the premise of the show. And right about 10 minutes in, I was like, why have I never watched this before? This is right up my alley. I can't think of the actor's name, but he played Ben in Lost. Hold on, give me a second here.
Lionel Fusco? Harold Finch.
Harold Finch is the character, but it's played by Michael. Emerson.
Oh, Michael Emerson. Sorry, yeah, I was reading the wrong side of IMDb. Yep.
Michael Emerson, and he plays a guy named Harold, who shows up at the Jim Caviezel is a former CIA operative that is basically become a homeless guy, and Harold Finch shows up and offers him a job and says, this person over here is in danger. I want you to follow them. And he's like, no, I'm not going to. And ends up following this guy and finds out that there's like a hitman out to get this person. And he rescues him. And then at the end of the episode, it's kind of like, how did you know? And he's like, there's a computer the government has that was created for 9/11, after 9/11, to track terrorists. But the computer is so smart, it pays attention to everyone and everything everywhere. But the government can't access all that information because that's not what it was created for. But he's created a back door, and he gets a Social Security number from the machine. And it's somebody that's in danger. And they basically got to show up and figure out. And sometimes the Social Security number isn't actually somebody that's in danger. It's the bad guy committing the crime. And they don't know until they get there.
Interesting. I see that Amy Acker is in it, too.
Yep. Yep. She's actually one of the villains.
Oh, cool. I'll watch Amy Acker in anything.
Yeah. And it seems like it was going to be one note, but it slowly starts introducing almost like a Batman-style circle of regular reoccurring villains or groups of villains.
Hmm.
Like, they find out that there's a corrupt bunch of cops. And so, like, every third or fourth episode revolves around somebody that's trying to be killed by these corrupt bunch of cops. And then there's another rogue CIA agent that's trying to kill somebody else. And he ends up becoming a reoccurring character. And it's like, while sometimes it does jump into like they're just going to protect somebody episode, there's always some kind of seemingly backstory thing that they're telling. And it does do the Arrow thing, where you kind of get a little bit of each of their backstories every episode in flashbacks, because they try to explain where this machine that Harold Finch created, where it came from and why, and why there's a back door that he can access. And they do a good job of explaining it. And it literally, every episode feels like a mini movie.
Cool.
That's the best way I can explain it. Is you, it gets over and I'm like, wait, that was only 40 minutes? That felt like I sat through a 2-hour movie. Oh.
Yeah.
The way they do it is really cool.
Yeah, pacing I find is key for turning a television show into making you feel like you're watching kind of feature length plots develop. Because they're writing it in a complex way, but then they're cutting away all the fluff. And so I imagine watching this, it's a pretty intense hour then.
Sometimes it's almost nonstop action from the beginning of the episode to the end of the episode.
Nice. Jim Caviezel is a fantastic actor. I really enjoy him.
He is. And my big takeaway is there's literally a scene in one of the first few episodes where there's a guy about to get away with a suspect that's being kidnapped. And Harold says to Jim Caviezel's character, "You got to find a way to stop them." And he's like, "Yeah, no, I'm on it." And he steps out from behind a car, right, with a ski mask on, pulls out a grenade launcher, and just shoots a grenade into the side of the car, blows off the doors, and rescues the guy out of the car, and they walk away. And I'm like, it's like a total Batman moment. Why is Jim Caviezel not Batman?
Because you can't be Jesus and Batman.
Exactly.
You have to pick, apparently. Yeah, that's funny. You know, I was looking at trailers the other day, trying to find more Superman, Batman stuff, but there's nothing official. And I just got me thinking, like, who else would you have chosen to play Batman in Batman versus Superman? And Caviezel would be a good cast. Like, he'd be a good person to play him.
Exactly. And the other thing, too, I will say, is some of the tech stuff is kind of wonky, and you're like, okay, I get it. Like, every time they try to get near a suspect, and their phone clones the other person's phone number, or they swap SIM cards, and it's fudgy, and you go, okay. But the one thing I will say that I've never seen them do, and I'm like halfway through the second season of the show, is they never do any of that CSI crap where like they look at a photo and they go enhance.
Yeah.
They don't do that. There's an episode where they do find a photo and he zooms in and you see it's wicked blurry. And he's like, I think I can make out the numbers on this license plate. But you can see that they didn't really enhance the photo. He just zoomed in and he's trying to read the blurry chunks that are blurry.
Nice. Well, I'm going to have to take that under advisement because that sounds like some cool stuff to check out. I do have a few other things on my list, and I've got some other things to get through. But soon enough, I'm going to have a lot of books to read. So I'm going to try to do more more book reading as opposed to television watching, which is always a good thing. One of the things that I've been doing this week, which is not so much consuming, but preparing to consume media, and that is I've been backing some Kickstarters. Both of them are art books. The first is by Lois Van Barrel, or Loish on DeviantArt. You can check out her stuff everywhere. Just do a Google search for Loish. And I'll post a link to the Kickstarter project as well. It's The Art of Loish, A Look Behind the Scenes. It's backed by a publisher called 3D Tools, and they've done a lot of digital art books before. She's already well past her 20,000 pound goal. She's at 237,000 pounds. As you might have guessed, she's a very popular artist on DeviantArt. There are still 15 days. There's 15 hours to go. On this, so while you're not going to be part of the crew that helped push her over the initial limit, proud to say that I was. You can at least get a copy of this book, and the stretch goals for the Kickstarter are double-sided bookmarks to go along with the book, and an entire deck of playing cards, all adorned with unique art on each card from Lois. So if that's something that turns your fancy and you find her art as mesmerizing and beautiful as I do, I can't remember off the top of my head what I pledged, and I'm not signing the Kickstarter, so it's not telling me, but I want to say 23 pounds is about where I landed, because that was the least you could do and get the book.
Yeah.
And even with shipping in, it was still something like $60 Canadian to get the thing purchased and shipped from the UK, which is really good. Like that is a very reasonable price to have a thick art book mailed to you. And I think that everybody that is in the art book world would do themselves a favor in the next 15 hours. So I'll do my best to get this podcast up as fast as possible, to go check out The Art of Loish, a look behind the scenes. And I have another one that I just backed today, while we're on this Kickstarter kick, if you pardon the pun. And my Google Docs is crashing, so I'm going to wait for Blush to come up on the screen. And that is The Art of Pernil Orem. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing your name. She's currently in Stockholm, Sweden, I think. Anyway, she does a lot of character design work. She's currently working at Warner Brothers. She does a lot of, I want to say pinup art, but it's not. I was going to say it's not sexy pinup, but it is sexy pinup, but it's sexy pinup in a very tasteful way, because she's a young woman, so she's not doing the kind of stuff that a young man would normally draw and post online with boobs spilling out everywhere. She's right. Got a lot of really cool high fashion designs happening in her sketches, and she has a very sincere video on Kickstarter. And again, it's also a very affordable book. It's Krona, I think, is the Swedish Denmark? I can't remember. Anyway, it worked out again to be somewhere in the realm of $40 to have this thing sent to me. So again, I'm super happy to have that in there. She's added some stretch goals. She is the one that only has days to go. She's got 6 days to go. She's well over her goal, so the book is going to happen. And with only like 700 backers in terms of Kickstarter, that's not a huge amount, but it means that a lot of people are asking for like the big packages with the cool stuff and the prints and things like that. So, but the book looks like it's going to be really cool. She's got the backing of she just mentioned a experienced publisher. She didn't mention who, but there's lots of cool art on the Kickstarter, and there's a link to her website as well. And I'm going to throw that in the chat room while I'm thinking about it. And also the Kickstarter, because it's nice not only to support independent artists in this way, but also really cool to see two very strong female artists putting out top notch stuff and get recognition for it with successful art books. So I'm stoked. In November, it's just going to rain art books in my apartment. It's going to be awesome. Yeah. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by tweakedaudio.com. You can visit that website for high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds. Enter the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's tweakedaudio.com, and the code is TCC for the Citadel Cafe, if you hadn't guessed. I'm going to let you do your pick first here, Lou, because I feel like I've been talking for a while.
Okay. You're looking for some new sci-fi horror novels or anything like that, there is, if you go to storybundle.com, yesterday they just posted a new story bundle, and it is authors and books that have received the Philip K. Dick Award for sci-fi. And there's about, for $15, there's 11 books.
For how much?
For $15.
Wow, so like $1.50 book.
Yeah.
And these are all digital copies?
These are all digital copies. I've bought books from them before. They give you basically PDF or Kindle versions of the book. Usually if you do have Kindle, you do have to email them to your Kindle. They don't just show up in your Kindle library.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, enough devices have a Kindle app now.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to just add stuff to read. I've bought several books through this bundled series. I have not bought this one yet, but I thought this was something that this just showed up yesterday.
So. Oh, wow. Very cool. See, the only problem I have with this is that I can barely have time to read the one book that I have now.
Yep.
Hint, that's why I'm buying art books. There's not that much to read.
Yep.
Wow. I mean, talk about a great deal, especially because they're all award-winning books. Like that's really what kind of got my attention. I mean, if it was just, hey, here's cool 15, you know, cool books for 15 bucks, I'd be just like, well, I don't know. I mean, how many of these are going to be kind of stinkers? You know, it's like DVD bundles. You know, years ago when you would walk into like an HMV and you're just like, oh, cool. Like Top Gun is bundled with these other two movies that I've never heard of. And I don't want to buy these two things.
I found these guys through one of their previous bundles was all books on video game history. And it was like 12 books that were all about different creations of different older games or the history of different companies that make games. And I bought a bunch of them and I've read about half of them. And they were all really good, and they were all done by authors or video game reviewers I've heard of that actually wrote these books. So
that's awesome. I love these bundle picks that you bring all the time. It's such a cool way to get some new stuff.
I'm just really cheap, man. Well, I try not to pay for anything if I can help it.
You know,
so when I come across these, I'm like, oh man, I can get 9 things for $1.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like this one doesn't really say anything straight up, but I feel like the Humble Bundle stuff that you mentioned, that's always going towards charity. So like, I wouldn't feel cheap there.
No, and I think these actually go towards supporting the authors themselves.
Oh, that's cool.
So.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're a lesser known author that happened to win an award, but like you don't have a giant publishing deal, then this could, you know, help bolster some of those numbers.
Cool. Right.
Well, I've got a couple of quick art picks. Imagine that this week. Different stuff, though. The first one is called Justin Plunkett. What did he call this? Storage is real. I don't know. My link again in Google Docs is giving me grief. So I'm going to have to put this in the browser real fast and kind of, wow, that didn't work at all. Okay. I'm going to skip that one and come back to it. The linesandcolors.com talked about Craig Drake. He is a designer and illustrator that used to work at ILM. And he has put together some kind of retro vector posters for Star Wars and The Matrix and Tron and some other really cool stuff. All of them are really cool. The Star Wars ones, of course, really caught my eye, especially the Episode 7 ones, which are at the lead part of the article. Really, really nice stuff. If you're into kind of illustrator vector art with very, very clean lines and bold use of black and colors and bright colors, like it's a lot of primary color stuff, then I would encourage you to check out linesandcolors.com. The post is from Tuesday, September 22nd. We'll have the link in the show notes. The other one is an artist. Justin Plunkett is a guy from, I want to say, Cape Town? Somewhere in South Africa. And what he's doing is putting together photos of fake, it's like a fake industrial landscape. He's taking urban photos and then photo mashing them into create fictional architecture that I thought was real. When I first saw this, I like architecture and new stuff, and I'm kind of a, not a nerd, but I really just enjoy seeing people do really different stuff with buildings in an urban space. And so this guy went in there and started making, like, what would a skyscraper look like if it was made out of, like, shantytown scraps? That sort of thing.
Yeah, that first photo of the shantytown, it reminds me of this, if you've ever read Ready Player One.
Okay. I've heard it's good, but I need to...
Okay, the part of the book begins in what's known as the stacks, and they're basically trailers that have been stacked on top of each other, and they've built entire towns like that where the trailers are stacked 15 and 20 high. And that's kind of what this reminds me of.
Yeah. I remember one time on Citadel Cafe, we were talking about homes that were actually made of real tractor trailers and cargo ship containers. And that does have this sort of feel as well. I really like the roller coaster stuff he's doing. And I mean, some of them just look like they're a little bit too unbelievable. And sometimes the Photoshop rendering is not fantastic, where it's like, all right, that looks like a fake, kind of a fake thing. But there's a couple that look like they could really exist. And on top of that, it's like the idea of taking all of this scrap metal and garbage and welding it together or somehow putting it all together, getting it up off the ground, you know, it's not leaching into the ground anymore, but then on the inside having a livable space, and a very unique livable space, is really appealing to me. I like the idea of just like, you know, the problem I have with all of these kind of ideas is that you need land in the first place, right?
Right.
So, I mean, any affordable land around here is well outside the city, and I don't have a car. So, and anything inside the city has already got a home on it. So, it, you know, you're kind of stuck in this loop of like, well, if I want to own a home, I have to buy an existing one. Or buy a chunk of someone's backyard and hope they let me put a tiny home there. You know, like stuff like that.
Right.
But this kind of thing where you could potentially, you know, upscale a vacant or really downtrodden neighborhood would be really cool. I'd like to see his vision for the skyscraper piece put into kind of an urban redevelopment.
Right.
You know, all it needs is just a little green. You know, like it just needs some planters, some hanging plants. Bamboo will grow everywhere. Just, you know, put bamboo in there and you will be safe. So sorry for all the helter-skelter on the links, guys. I will definitely have everything organized in the show notes at thecitadelcafe.com when I get this episode posted. And that's it. That's the end of the show. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by Alpha Geek Radio at alphageekradio.com. And music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. Actually, incidentally, I had an email from my friend Rob earlier tonight, and he was asking about the music for the Citadel Cafe. It's royalty-free. I didn't actually hire anybody to compose it. It just happened to be the perfect piece for me to use. And Kevin MacLeod we have a link at the end of all of our show notes to his website where you can find all kinds of royalty-free stuff, as well as things that you can pay him for kind of a la carte. So if you're doing podcasting, if you're doing anything that might require some composing, then check out the link at the bottom of the show notes for Kevin MacLeod's work. The episode will be available on demand and via iTunes and our website, of course. When I do have time, I always check the Citadel Cafe email. Haven't had any in a while, so if you'd like to drop me a line and tell me how right I am and how wrong Lou is, then thecitadelcafe@gmail.com is where you can do that. And don't forget to check out iTunes and leave us a review. If you like the show, it's one of the best ways for new listeners to kind of find it and reach out on YouTube. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online at joelduggan.com. And what did I do today? I posted a new Starcrossed comic. You can go to starcrossedonline.com and check out the new strip. It's all about the new rainbow barfing selfies from Snapchat and how much I don't hate them, but the characters in my comic strip have a different opinion. I'll leave it at that. I had a lot of fun with this one. And if you like the comic and you go to my Patreon page, which is Joel Duggan. That's everything else is Joel Duggan. At the beginning, Patreon starts with patreon.com and then / Joel Duggan. And if you go there, you can sign up and check out some behind the scenes stuff that I do. And I posted a big one this week. I talked about everything from the idea on Post-it notes through thumbnails, all the way through to a tight rough sketch before inking. And then I recorded a video of myself inking. I'm going to post that for my patrons as well, as soon as I have a chance to edit that. And of course, right now you can find the finished strip up there. So if you are interested in some behind the scenes comic work, then consider becoming a patron. It helps me make my stuff. And follow me on Twitter and Tumblr with just my name. That is the end of my very long show outro rant, which I'm now realizing I should probably edit down a little bit. Lou, where can people find you online?
The easiest way to find me is at BusyZombieLord on Twitter. And you can check out my show, Zombies Ate My Podcast, at zombiesatemypodcast.com on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from. So we're pretty much on everything.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap. But you can only pick two.
I saw the new season of Longmire. I didn't add that to the list. Because I'll tell you right now, if you like Longmire, it's just more of the same.
Okay, well,
It's literally like it picks up where it leaves off and just continues.
Right.
And it's almost like the last season just didn't stop. That's
okay.
It.
Cool.
There's not a whole lot to talk about without knowing what happened in the previous seasons.
Right. And then I sat down to try to watch that before dinner and realized that I tried to watch, like, when that stuff happens, I usually watch the last episode, or I watch the last 10 minutes of the last episode. And I tried to do that, and I was like, shit, I don't think I finished season 3. Because I was like, I don't remember any of this. And it's been a while, but it's not been crazy long. But yeah, so I mean, we can mention that in the show, because I'm a big fan, and I have not seen any of season 4. It's on my list now that I'm done Narcos.
As soon as you finish season 3, you won't even notice the difference going into season 4. It's literally like it picks up exactly where it left off and just continues.
Excellent.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.